Talk for today. Do anything a bit at a time, and it is quickly done. That's a big thought. Do anything a bit at a time, and it is quickly done. Do anything a bit at a time, and it's quickly done. Now, all of you are experiencing knitting. And you knit and purl and knit and purl and whatever you call it. And so you're putting this little piece of fabric over another little piece of fabric, and you're making a pattern. You're making a pattern of a weave. And perhaps you're interspersing it with a little color, but probably it's just plain one color. And you're making this pattern. And if this pattern isn't perfect, then you go back and you unstitch it and you stitch it perfectly. Because you want to have a perfect fabric. You don't want anyone looking at your knitting and saying you were knitting while you were sleeping. Mm-hmm. You want them to recognize that you knew what you were doing when you did it. Doing anything a little bit at a time, it's quickly done. How many times do you think of your mother? And you think of her at home, taking care of the house perhaps, taking care of the children, and then in the evening, sitting while everyone is doing whatever they're doing, and she has her knitting. And lo and behold, a sweater emerges for me. It's a beautiful chain link type of sweater, you know, this chain type of knit. And for my brother, a big baggy sweater, which he likes very much, which sort of hangs all over him, gives him the feeling of being with it, you know. And then for my sisters, she knits a scarf, or she knits gloves, or she knits whatever. And in a period of a month or two, she's knitted a dozen things. And we aren't even aware that she's doing it. She's just sitting there quietly in her chair, talking with us and sharing with us, but knitting. Just a little bit at a time. And in no time at all, a beautiful sweater that I wore all through high school. It was a rust color with this chain link knit to it. It was my favorite. And I wore it and I wore it, and she re-knitted the elbows so that they would match the elbows that I had worn out. She didn't put a piece of leather on there like most mothers would, but she just re-knitted it so it looked exactly like new. And I went to school the next day and the guy said, "How come your elbows aren't sticking through anymore? You know, did you get a new sweater?" "Yeah, you know." Little bit at a time. Nothing to it, just a little bit at a time. Just like you can interweave colors into your knit, so you can interweave the knit into your knit to make it look like the original knit, even though the original knit had been worn out. Life is like that in so many ways. If we do each little thing a little bit at a time, pretty soon everything that we do is quickly done. We'll be talking about this later, but it comes up now. When you have a tough letter to write, put it on top of your pile. Write it first thing when you sit down at your machine and write it right away. And then it's done. If you put it later, you're always going to be hesitant about getting to it. You want to put it off to the last, even shuffle it down further. But if you get it done first, then all the rest of it seems like nothing. All the rest of the letters that you write, all the rest of the things that you're doing on your desk, seem like just nothing at all, because you just go through it so easily, just a little bit at a time. When you have a problem, and that problem is that, let's just say you have cancer, and it's eating away inside you, the doctor says it's pretty serious. We have not been able to stop it. And you say to yourself, "Why am I allowing this to happen?" So you pull a little game that Simon used to teach the fellows at the air base. And he would teach these fellows who had cancer, he was a doctor. And he'd say, "Now, just visualize your white corpuscles going throughout your whole body, eating up all those cancer cells. Just eating them up. And no problem. They just eat them up and poof, they're gone. essentially that's how it functions. And so as he was teaching this to his fellows, they were practicing it and doing it. One fellow had cancer in his throat. He couldn't eat hardly and do anything. And Simon went in to see him every day. And he said, "Well, how are my white cancer, my white blood cells doing?" "Ah, yes, hey, they're working in there. I can see it. They're starting to clean out that mess you got down there. That's great. Just keep seeing those white blood cells, those white corpuscles going in there and just doing a good job." And so he did. "Oh, hey, that's super. I see them eating away like crazy down there. It's great." And the airman believed him. There was really no change, but the change had to come. And every day he said this to the fellow. And every day the fellow had a little bigger smile on his face, a little more hope, you might say, a little more possibility that something might happen. And then one day the fellow said, "Yeah, those white corpuscles are doing a great job." And he spoke. And Dr. Simon said, "Wow, great. You're doing wonderful." And then the next day he spoke more. Then he started speaking to the other fellows who were in the ward with him. They had, of course, been treated by Dr. Simon. And as he was dealing with them, little by little, they too, he says, "Boy, my white corpuscles are really good. How are your white corpuscles today? How are your white corpuscles? Are your white corpuscles working good, you know?" And it's not the white corpuscles. I don't want to take that away from you, but it's not. It's your thought. It's your thought that you are taking charge and you are disposing of those little fellows that have forgotten what their job was and they just went haywire, cells that didn't remember what they're supposed to do. Little by little, one little one at a time. "Hey, I can see it. Oh, that's great." How do you see a white corpuscle, you know? Mm-hmm. But the patients were glad to hear him say that. And the patients believed in him. And the patients got well. All of them. All of them. The guys who really did not have as close a treatment with him, as well as the ones who did. Because they were in the same ward. And they were all, "How are your white corpuscles today? How are your white corpuscles today?" They had those white corpuscles going. And then one of the guys says, "You know, you can do anything you want to do if you do it a little bit at a time. And I decided I'm going to name my white corpuscles. George, Mary, Henry, David, you know." And one of them said, "I'm going to name mine Dr. Simon." And the other said, "Hey, great. How's Dr. Simon doing today? How's Henry and George and Mary doing today?" And they're all saying, "Oh, they're doing a great job." And little by little, these patients were home with a clean bill of health. They did it to themselves. Their white corpuscles may have been somehow serendipitously involved. But actually, it was their thought. It was their thought that the cleaning up work was being done. They were seeing it being eaten away and being disposed of. They saw themselves returning to their original purity and integrity. Dr. Simon would go to each one, and he'd say these things to each one. And each one would say, "Wow, yeah, I feel much better. Yeah, sure, And they would take an interest in life. Whereas before, they were just getting ready to die, and not a very pleasant death. Now, they're getting ready to live with an absolutely perfect body. Because all these people the doctor was working with, were between the ages of 18 and 30. They were all young men in the Air Force. And they were really interested in staying alive. They had a long life ahead of them yet. They had wonderful adventures, mountains to climb, rivers to swim. They had things to do. And Dr. Simon taught them, little by little, to work on themselves and see it being done. And they did that. And they were successful. The Sistine Chapel is quite a large endeavor. It covers almost an acre of ground on the ceiling. And Michelangelo was given that task. So, he was told to paint the story of creation on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. The story of creation. Well, now, he had read Genesis, and he'd seen how Genesis described these things. But then he listened within. And when he listened within, he heard something else. He heard, "We are our own creator. Man is his own creator." And he had man creating. He had man being the dominant figure on the Sistine Chapel. Oh yes, God was very much there, but God was a man. God was just maybe a trifle bigger than the rest of the men. A trifle more muscles, a trifle more pathos in him, a feeling of caring, a feeling of these are my creation, this is my children, that sort of act. But Michelangelo did not stop to think, what should God look like? He listened within, and stroke by stroke, within a very short time, God appeared on the ceiling of the chapel. And then Adam appeared, because it was the story of creation. And as far as they were concerned, the story of creation began with Adam and Eve. They forget that Adam and Eve came into the Garden of Eden, which was already there, and all that other good stuff, but that's okay. We're not interested in logic. Never are we interested in logic when we're dealing with anything in life. So, Adam is laying back like this, carelessly. "Yeah, okay, you can touch me. You can touch my hand." He doesn't look like this. "Yes, yes, give me life. Give me life. Give me breath." He says, "Hey, I've already got life. I've already got breath. I'm already doing my thing. Just touch my hand and give me your..." What did he have him give him? What does a son want from his father when he gets married, or a daughter want from his blessing. Father? They want their blessing. What God was doing and is doing on the Sistine Chapel is giving his blessing to his creation. And his creation is just as flamboyant as he, because his creation is he. You look at Adam, and you'll find that Adam is a young impression of God, dynamic, cocky, self-assured, believing, "Hey, I got the world out here, it's all mine, you know, I'm number one." And then he paints the Adam and Eve scene. And he paints the serpent scene. He paints all the scenes from the story of Genesis, little by little. He didn't look up there and say, "Oh my God, how could I ever start or finish something like that? It's so big, you know. I mean, I'm only one man. And I'm supposed to paint the entire Sistine Chapel. That's a football field, an acre of ground. How can I do that?" He didn't say that. Because to him, each object that he put there was a manifestation of his own inward self. It was a manifestation of his own spiritual purity, of his imagination, of his dreaming. And he wants to put his dream there. No one else could have finished that. No one else could have ever done what he did. They would have done it, but differently. They would have had a different dream. They would have created a different idea of what God looks like. Leonardo da Vinci lived the same time as Michelangelo. And Michelangelo painted the Sistine Chapel, and he did David, and he did many other beautiful works. Leonardo did the Last Supper, for one thing. And the characters in the Last Supper were gorgeous, beautiful. But they were totally out of perspective They're totally from Leonardo da Vinci's mind, from his creative self, and they were all dressed respectably. Then Michelangelo made everyone virtually naked up on the ceiling. In fact, they were. And they had to go up and paint clothes on them later on. But everything, because it's the creation story. You don't come out of the womb with a full suit of clothes on, you know. But that's what they felt they had to do at that time. It was the prudery of that period of time, which has not changed. And the beauty of it is, he did it a bit at a time, just a little bit at a time, just a little. He took one figure. He knew what the rest was going to be. The vision was in his mind, complete. And then he would take one figure out, and another figure out, and another figure, and he would make them all come true. And then he'd say, okay, John, you go and paint the background. Ellen, you go paint the background, you know. Anita, you go paint the grass and the trees. And Sylvia, you go paint the lakes and the fishes and stuff like that. And Ingeborg, you go paint the carpeting, you know. You go put this up and that up and fix. You see, he did the essence. He did the dreaming. He did the imagination. He did the figures that spoke to you and speak to you today. Anyone who is at least sensitive in the slightest, looking at the Sistine Chapel, would like to spend their life looking at it. It's so gorgeous, so beautiful. You can buy reprints of it, photographs of it, many, in fact, there's volumes that have pictures in it of it. But they're nothing. They're nothing. To look at the whole is to look at grandeur at its greatest and most beautiful expression. To look at the pieces here and there, which of course your mind does, as you look up there, you look at God or Adam or Eve or whatever. But in the presence of this magnificence, you are overwhelmed with not necessarily a genius, but with divinity expressing in a most magnificent way. You can express divinity in a most magnificent way. A little bit at a time. You say, well, what can I do a little bit at a time? Let me tell you one of the things that you probably don't even think about. You put one letter on a piece of paper at a time, and in a period of time, you have written words and sentences. And the words and sentences describe the magic that's within you. One letter at a time. You punch one key on your computer at a time. You don't go, some people can, but they're still only punching one at a time. As quickly as I have typed in my lifetime, I still only hit one key at a time, but very quickly, very accurately. One key at a time, and out of that key comes the great adventures of history. Comes the great literature of history, comes the masterpieces of history, comes the declarations of war, the declarations of peace. Out of that one little sheet of paper can come marriage proposals, there can come death notices, there can come life notices, there can come born this day. Out of it come the newspapers of the world, the magazines. Out of it comes the internet. Out of it comes a whole world of activity. And, my loves, this too shall pass. This too shall pass. Newspapers, magazines, television, radio, and the mind will come closer to its ultimate potential of being all things at all times. Being aware of whatever you wish to be aware of. Being aware of your genius. Being aware of what's going on in the world anywhere. Being aware of what went on in the world anywhere. Being aware of history, because it's happening right now. Being aware of future, because it's happening right now. Being aware of the present, because it's happening right now. being aware of anything you want. You have some object and you say to yourself, I wonder what that object will be 1,000 years from now. And you're aware and you say, wow, how different. But you see, you have the capacity, just one little bit at a time, to do anything and have it quickly done. The Sistine Chapel was a piece of majesty done in a very short time, even with interruptions, even with no pay, even with no warmth up there, Ingeborg. He didn't have a warm place to work up there at the ceiling. On the cold days in Rome, and damp days and rainy days, days that his paint wouldn't glutenize, it wouldn't go together, days that he would mix his special colors and then they'd run because there was too much fluid, or there wasn't enough fluid and it would fall back in his face. The artistry of His Majesty was not just in the pictures he put there, which were in themselves a feat that was unbelievable, but how he put it there, how he created the colors to express the ideas he had in his mind, how he created not only the colors but the paint, the pigments, the essence of the paint itself, and how he went through brushes. My goodness, how many brushes must he have gone through? And his clothes, every day he came down from his work and his clothes were sodden with paint of various kinds. And he couldn't do it at night because it would make smoke over his paintings. And when it was dark outside, he couldn't see too well. Many things would cause him to dissuade him from doing his task. But it was in him as a gift and a choice to do. And he did it. And he did it quickly. And went on to other things. I mean, here, the majesty of the world's greatest painting, and truly it is, and certainly in size, but also in content, in beauty. And yet, he went on to do other things. He went on to sculpt. He went on to His Majesty never ended. I don't know about his death, but I imagine he died a very happy man because he did what he wanted to do, and he did it each time quickly. You and I, we can do what we want to do, and we can do it each time quickly too. We can knit if we wish, and before you know it, we'll have a whole sweater done. We'll have gloves and a hat done. We can clean the carpet in the whole house, 26,100 square feet, my goodness sakes. Just one little bit at a time. One little bit at a time, you go back and forth and you move the furniture and you do it one little bit at a time. Then you go on to the next part, one little bit at a time. And before you know it, you got it all done. I had 129 in a mobile park, in a mobile trailer, and the carpet had not been cleaned for many years. And it was not a bad carpet, it was just well dirtied. Not well worn, but well dirtied. And so Stefan was visiting me and he said he wanted to, you know, do whatever I wanted him to do. And I said, all right, Stefan, clean the carpet. So we rented a carpet cleaner and he cleaned the carpet. And I said, my, that is dirty fluid that's coming out of there. He said, sure is. I said, all right, clean it again. So he waited a day or so and then he cleaned it again. And the dirt came out exactly like it was before. And then I said, do it again. And I'm not sure how many times we did it, 3, 4, 5 times, but each time as much dirt came out as there had been the previous time, until the last time. And the last time, the carpet looked so brilliant, so new, so beautiful, and a lot of Stefan's work was in there. But it was fantastic, a glorious carpet. You see, a little bit at a time, and the patience of doing it again and again, even though you know you did your best. You did the best the machine could do, you know, but you didn't. You did the best the machine could do on that go-around, but another go-around and another go-around, until finally there was no more, apparently, to come out. Five times, four or five times. Wow, what patience he had and what patience I had with him. Because I had to quietly, inwardly say to him, please do it again. And it wasn't easy for him to go and do it again, because he wasn't used to being told what to do. He wasn't used to being directed by other people, and certainly not to do it again and again and again, something so tedious as that. But he did it. He did a good job. And he'll never forget it. Another tedious task that Stefan had done. Outside of our shed, people would go in and out of the shed, and they would get nails, and they'd get screws, and they'd get other things, and they were careless. They would fall out of their jar, or they'd fall out of their hands as they were carrying some nails and some screws and things. So in front of the shed, there was a whole blanket of screws and nails over a period of several years. And so, one day, Stefan was having a hard time coming to terms with himself. And so I said, Stefan, I believe it's time for you to pick up the nails and the screws. So Stefan was very abrupt about it, but he said, okay. And he was about 21 years old at the time. And so he went to the shed, and he started picking up these nails and screws. And he got box after box after box of them. And I said, rake it up, rake it up, they're there. And he got more boxes. And then I said, rake it up, they're there. He got more boxes. And he said, I've got them all now. And I said, no, you haven't. So I went out there with him, and we took the rake, and we brushed in the surrounding area too, you know, in the grass around it, and in the path itself. And we got two more boxes of nails and screws. Fantastic. You'd never think they were there. Then, after he finished, we drove the little Honda, little green Honda, before the Accord, just a Honda, over that area. He got a flat tire. One screw was there, stood up on end, and jumped right into the tire. Well, we changed the tire, and I said, Stefan, I do believe there are more nails and screws there. And so we went over it on hands and knees with a fine tooth comb, and we found two more boxes of nails and screws. Now, it took almost a week to do that. And it wasn't really important. We could have parked somewhere else. We didn't have to drive in there. That was just in front of the work shed where we kept our tools and our screws and nails. And now we had lots of screws and nails. But just by little, it was a job that we didn't know was going to be so large. At least Stefan didn't know it was going to be so large. And he stuck with it. And when he got done, I think he will tell you himself today, it was one of the most important jobs he's ever done in his life, because he never realized that they would grow out of the ground like that. They would just appear. Anita has gone through that too, down here at the intersection. Every time we walk by the intersection, I say, look, Anita, here's another screw, another nail sitting there. And she says, well, I took the electromagnetic magnet and I went through the whole thing to pick them all up. I surely got them all. Well, we didn't. Now, do anything a bit at a time, and it is quickly done. Anything a bit at a time, and it's quickly done. But you have to have that patience to do it a bit at a time. Because most of us, we want to rush through a thing. we'll take the broom and swish, swish, and the dust will fly up in the air, and then when we're done, the dust settles over what we swept, and we have to sweep it again. But if we gently sweep it, gently move it a little bit at a time, instead of building up a cloud of dust, we'll have the job done in no time, and we'll be proud of ourselves. Do anything a bit at a time, and it's quickly done. Virtually anything. Love another person a little at a time, and it'll be quickly done, permanently. Do the cooking on medium heat. Do everything a bit at a time, and you're a winner. I love you.